So this month, we've been exploring the fourth noble truth, the path that leads out of our suffering, known as the Eightfold Path. Right understanding, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. A lot of rights. In the past weeks, Lyndall and Lauren gave us a background of this teaching and investigated how various teachers describe the path. Today, Judith, Suze, and I, and I think I forgot to identify myself, I'm Candace, one of the local Dharma leaders. We're going to talk about a little bit of how we work with the Eightfold Path and how we think about it. For me, the Eightfold Path is a guide and an anchor, particularly helpful in difficult times, when I need something to steady me, when I yearn for something like emergency lights guiding me to safety. Years ago, when my parents were failing and I was going through a difficult time, I searched for something to steady me and guide me through the storm of deep emotions. I found what I sought in the Dharma. It was not so much meditation. I'd been meditating in my yoga practice. But the Eightfold Path was a revelation. I heard the Buddha saying, "This is not all talk. Here's a way to walk the talk, a checklist, a way to live." Philip Moffat refers to it as a matrix of behavior, understanding, and practice for finding peace of mind and meaning in your life. He talks about three skills we need to investigate and develop: how to sustain your practice over your lifetime, how to reference your practice such that it becomes an organizing presence in your daily life, really helpful, and how to open to the deep realization in your practice that lead to the fruition of the path to freedom. This is how we practice practice. In that difficult time, I used the Eightfold Path as a checklist, a pause to look within and ask how I was doing. I read all the commentaries I could find and tried to absorb the wisdom and make it second nature. I'm in another watershed moment in my life, witnessing my older sister's last days and her death. On April 1st, my brother-in-law called early in the morning. I knew from his voice I was going to hear something painful. My sister's last chance chemo had failed, and she had a few weeks to live. I didn't even stop to think, just said, "I'm coming as soon as I can." They're on the other side of the continent. I want to say that I made a conscious decision about what was right in that moment, but honestly, I just followed my heart. And what was there was love, plain and simple. I booked a flight for the next day. It wasn't until I was throwing clothes into a suitcase that I paused to anchor myself in what felt like the right view for this trip. And there it was again. Love. Just love. Following my heart felt right. Love pushed me to leave immediately, to stay in my sister's house, to help my brother-in-law and niece to do whatever needed doing. We've talked throughout this month about the adjective right, whether some other word might be more appropriate. And I've often leaned toward wise. But in this case, I was following what felt right to me. What was most likely to create harmony around my sister? Our body knows when it's right. So for now, right feels appropriate to me. You know how gnarly it can be when you're headed toward family. It's never easy. There's so much history, so many regrets, slights, misunderstandings. But in the clarity of the moment, I didn't think about anything but wanting to be with my sister and letting her know how much she is loved. That's all. I set a firm intention not to get caught up in all that. It was unimportant. I didn't know whether I could hold myself to that, but I vowed to do my best. When I arrived, I almost immediately crawled into bed with my sister, and we just held each other, crying happy and sad tears. I didn't care who heard us, who saw me. No self-consciousness tripped me up. I was just love. And that's how it played out. With the Eightfold Path as my checklist, my emergency lights. Right view, love. Ignore all the stuff that rises when I'm with my family. I wanted my sister to be surrounded by love, buoyed by it, eased by it. Right intention, to be loving, kind, to be available for whatever my sister and her grieving husband and daughter needed. Right speech, to speak from love, and that meant not bringing up my own stuff unless it was something I felt my sister wanted to hear. I didn't hold back on expressing love, even to tell her I'd always wanted to be her. She said, "You never told me." "Of course not. How uncool." But none of that mattered. Right action, rushing to her side, doing whatever needed doing, and not doing what no one asked for. Not overstaying. After a few days, more relatives began arriving, and I bowed out to give them a chance to be with her. Right livelihood didn't really apply at the time. Right effort, effortlessness seemed the key here. Not to push. Certainly not to push any personal agenda. And being so present that I could see or hear or just feel what was needed. Being available. Right mindfulness. I listened, 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 and read body language. Again, so I was available for whatever was needed. And so I'd hear and remember and have those precious memories. Right concentration. Death concentrates the mind. Knowing this was my last few days with my sister, I was so focused nothing else existed. I was just there, right there in the moment, and it was joyful. Even now, 3 weeks later, with her death and funeral in between, when I think back to that visit, I smile. My brother-in-law said, "Better than Woodstock," when I was leaving. Philip Moffat says, the felt sense of being present in the body while working with each of the eight factors of the path is essential to fully realizing their impact. He says, committing to an integral approach to liberation involves constantly asking yourself, at this moment, am I causing suffering or not causing suffering? During those days and in the weeks since, communicating with family, my focus on being love, being kind and compassionate, nothing else, has given me such clarity. It's pulled me out of myself. I've been one with all of them, finding the harmonious way to be with them. And that, to me, is liberation. Instead of flailing around, adding more suffering to what's already a difficult time, I've found an unexpected peace and joy. The poem I read in the meditation is for me a description of walking the path. It's that thread. And I hope this helped you see a little bit about how we can really get focused with something like that. And everything else falls away. Thank you for your kind attention. Now I hand it over to Judith.
Thank you, Candace. That was beautiful. So I have been thinking about the concept of lists and the metaphor of the path. And start with list because when I first dipped into the Buddhist teachings, I think my first thought was, oh, good heavens, there are a lot of lists. How will I ever memorize all these lists? Well, to be honest, I have not memorized all these lists, but I have realized that this is not school. That it's not so important that I memorize them as that I understand them. And I'm beginning to realize that there is a benefit to having things in lists. Okay, so basically the Four Noble Truths, dealing with suffering, the end of suffering, and the Fourth Noble Truth, dealing with wisdom, ethical conduct, and meditation, essentially. Now, every spiritual path I've been involved with deals with wisdom, ethical conduct, and meditation. But having it in a list has provided a lot of clarity and a lot of understanding as to how all these things go together, how they relate to each other. And I've also been realizing that there are basically two kinds of lists. Okay, there's sequential lists, and as a former technical writer, I used a lot of sequential lists, you know, when I was writing user documentation. You do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. And it seems to me that the list of the Four Noble Truths is a sequential list, because first you understand the nature of dukkha, then you can understand the cause of it, and then you can understand that actually it can be ended, and then finally, here's the fourth noble truth, here's how you do it. But the fourth noble truth, of course, is also a list, and it's a different kind of list. It's a non-sequential list, and we've been talking about that a lot this month, and it's more like my grocery list, okay? I go to the co-op, I don't buy the first thing on the list and then the second and then the third and the fourth. No, I start where I am in the store. I start with a section where I am. I get all the things on the list that are in that section, move on to the next section. And the fourth noble truth is like that. And I think that I probably started with ethical conduct long before I had even heard of the Buddha, because my parents raised me to have a sense of ethics, right? And this is something I carried into my adulthood. And then when I became interested in spirituality, I started meditating. And I think wisdom is probably still a work in progress, but definitely I am getting, I'm getting somewhere on that, yeah. So anyway, thinking about that brought me to the concept of the path, because it says eightfold path. And when I first saw that, I thought of progression, starting at point A, going to point B. But it's really not like that. And so I've been thinking about actual physical paths that have been important in my life. Now, right now, I live in Bellingham, and I live right by two entrances to the Inner Urban Trail. So I am on that trail practically every day. And it's really, really long, and it joins other trails. And there is no way I will ever start at the beginning of that trail and go to the end of it. It's just too long. So what happens? I drop into it where I am, right? And then I can go east, or I can go west, or there are little trails that go off it that I can take and come back to it. And I was thinking, yeah, actually, that's kind of like a non-sequential path, right? And then I was thinking of another path from my past when I lived in Quebec. So I lived on this big property. There was a farmhouse. I lived in the farmhouse, but I also built a cabin in the forest, a meditation cabin. And when I moved there, there was kind of the shadow of a path that went to the cabin. And, you know, Carrie, Monday night, was also talking about the metaphor of the path. And she said, the path doesn't exist until we walk it, right? Or until someone walks it. And basically, you make the path when you walk it, and you keep it open by walking it. And so the path to the cabin was a lot like that. We started walking it. There was this, you know, little shadow of a path, because it had been the horse and buggy road years and years and years ago, and then had been moved to accommodate property lines. So we started walking that little fragment of a path into the forest, and then we definitely created the path from that path up to the cabin. And it was just because I walked it all the time that kept it open. So then I was thinking about the Buddha saying that he didn't make the path. He discovered it. And because he walked it, he kept it open. He kept it open for his disciples, and he kept it open for people to come, right? And he also said, I teach one thing, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. And that is the essence of the Four Noble Truths, right? Suffering and the end of suffering. And it's really amazing to think of all the changes that have happened in the world in the 15 or 16 centuries since the Buddha lived, and that is still relevant today because it deals with the essence of the human experience. And so now today, we are the ones walking the path. We're the ones keeping it open, right? We're keeping it open for future generations. Yeah. So anyway, those have been my thoughts. And now I will turn it over to Suze.
Thank you both, Candace and Judith. It's so fun. We had gotten together to talk about what we were going to talk about. But it's, as often happens, it's just perfect that I'm coming right after Judith, who's talking about the path. Because I wanted to talk about three things of how I'm practicing with the Four Noble Truths. And the first one happened, I just got back from retreat at Cloud Mountain. And those of you who've gone on retreat, you know that you start out, you take the precepts. And the first precept is I undertake the training to refrain from taking life of any living being. So it was the first morning of the retreat, and I walk up the hill to my favorite walking path. And it's this little path, it's all moss covered, and it's only about 25 or 30 paces, so it's kind of perfect for a walking path. I start on my walk, and first thing I see is this giant brown slug. Well, I'm a gardener, you know, and I'm not a super big fan of big brown slugs, but I had just taken the precept. So I'm looking at this slug and kind of, you know, acknowledging this is your home. This is where you live. Unfortunately, you're not in my garden. And I end this little conversation with, you know, may you be well. And I continue walking. And I'm walking back and forth. And then after a few times back and forth, I go, oh, I wonder where the slug is. So I'm looking around and looking around, and to my horror is a little bit strong, but to my, I'll use horror. I had walked right on that slug and flattened it and killed it. And I just went, oh my goodness, I'd just taken this precept. And while, I mean, it's, you might say, oh, it's just a brown slug and there are gazillions of them. It kind of woke me up for the retreat in terms of the first thing I want to say about as we go into the Eightfold Path is paying attention, being present, being as awake we can be is so essential. All of our waking hours, doing no harm, from inattention. That's what I did. I did harm from inattention. It really helped my retreat quite a bit. The slug paid the price of that. But so that was the first thing I wanted to say, just in terms of, you know, we're bringing our practice along with this, the Eightfold Path, which is really, it's not about thinking about it so much as it's doing it. So the second thing I wanted to talk about is as we enter the Eightfold Path, I went back to the first three Noble Truths to see where am I with that? And all that I've been practicing for decades. And for these decades, I've had a hard time really staying with dukkha. You know, dukkha is to be felt and understood. Clinging is to be abandoned. The end of dukkha is to be realized. You know, the Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. And as I pondered starting the Eightfold Path, I went, do I really understand dukkha? I've been, unfortunately or fortunately, cultivating ways to avoid dukkha for years. And I, if for those of you, and most of you are pretty familiar Sunday morning folks, I've talked about how mantras are really helpful to my practice. And this year I've been using the mantra of, may I receive life with ease. And as I was exploring my relationship with dukkha, I realized that there's a real downside to my mantra, because it's giving me an out that I can jump over the dis-ease of dukkha and immediately go find some ease in receiving whatever is coming in. You know, and for me, switching to a different mantra is actually helpful. But the really important piece of it is that I've reminded myself to not move away so quickly from those painful thoughts, body sensations, interaction, you know, interactions with people, problems that happen in my business, whatever. I'm a problem solver. I'm really practical. And in my business, it's helpful to, you know, I don't stay with the problem. But emotionally, and I think body-wise and practice-wise, I really need to give more attention to what does this feel like, and stay with that. What, recognize the storyline that I come up. And another really important piece for me, and this might resonate with you, is don't jump into metta practice when difficulty arises. You know, it's so common, I think, you're sitting and your meditation's hard, you know, and your mind's going yada yada, or your back hurts or whatever, and you start, oh, I think I'll do some metta, which is lovely. But asking myself, am I just using metta to avoid being with what is? The Dharma is defined as truth, the truth of the way things are. And so I encourage everyone to go back to the first two noble truths. I'm not talking about all the ways that I cling. That's another piece of it. But for me, going back to the very first noble truth, and how am I relating to dukkha? The third thing I want to talk about is really encouraging us all as we enter into this Eightfold Path. So we're going to have all the rest of the year, each month on one of these, to bring along your entire Dharma toolkit. All the teachings that have really resonated with you. Many of you who were part of our Sunday Sangha last year found that the paramis were really a powerful practice. And one of the most powerful ones for me was the month on renunciation. I spent it on renouncing worry, but the whole process of renunciation is such a big piece. So here I was on retreat and being more mindful after I killed the slug and, you know, having your usual retreat time. And an old issue came up, a really old issue that I thought that I had processed and understood it and maybe healed some of the early early childhood pain from it and stuff. And it was pretty clear that I hadn't done all of that. And so the thought came to me about, well, what if I practice with renouncing this old, the storyline of this old issue, And, you know, when we've talked about renunciation, and Lauren often reminds us of when the Buddha taught about renunciation, and he said, you know, my heart didn't leap up either when I considered it, but I looked at the benefits and the drawbacks. And I realized that the biggest drawback of this old issue and the storyline is I don't want that to be what's filling my mind and heart when I die. You know, the five recollections are a huge part of my practice. I start every meditation with it. Sometimes three, four times a day, I recite the recollections. And I came into the path through the issue of death and dying. So when I realized that I didn't want this storyline to be what was there at my end, I started looking at, well, how do I renounce it? You know, I have to start with some understanding of it. I also have to go back to the pain of it, the dukkha of it. How am I feeding it? You know, clinging in some ways is a feeding that we do. And we it helps us hold on for way longer than when it would be useful. So I wanted to close this morning for me with really encouraging people to go back into your practice. What has really been useful to you as you've cultivated your depth of understanding, your calmness, the collectedness of mind and heart? What has really worked for you? Perhaps rekindle that and bring it along with you as you enter these next months of the Eightfold Path. Thanks for all your attention, and I'll put it back to our fearless leader Candace.
Thank you, Suze and Judith. This was fun. I always learn so much just listening. And I think what I'd like to do this morning, since you've had a variety of ideas, is to keep it open to the entire group for our discussion and give you a couple of ideas if you're kind of looking around for what could I talk about. I think Suze had a wonderful one. What's your Dharma toolkit? You know, what's been useful to you? Which is a great thing to be thinking about right now as we're now moving into more of a focus on each of the factors of the Eightfold Path. Or you could tell us about how's your practice with the Four Noble Truths? How's this year so far been sitting with you? Do you have questions about it? What are your thoughts about the Eightfold Path? Is it clear to you what it is? So you have some ideas, and I wanted to remind everyone the emphasis in our discussion is respectful, non-judgmental listening with the intention to understand. We can learn so much from one another. This creates a safe space for sharing our personal reflections and experiences. So when we're in a group discussion like this, we refrain from offering advice, and what we keep what is shared confidential. We limit our sharing so each person has a chance to speak. And I'd love, love to encourage the people who rarely speak to let us know what's going on with you. I think we're quite a community now in the Sunday sit, and we care about everybody. And we really want to know how it's going. So, you're welcome to raise your hand and unmute and let us know what's going on with you, how this is all kind of sitting with you.
Looks like Charlotte's been raising her hand.
Oh, Charlotte, go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, This week, I joined a friend who was going to the Kaiser at Port Orchard for a test. And that Kaiser had a path all the way around it. And I thought, well, I'm going to take a little adventure. And so I got on the path and I walked and walked and walked around. Birds were singing and lots of trees and plants. And that little path walk is still with me. And so when you're talking about the path that we were walking, that came to my mind and it was so calming and exhilarating because I took a chance on that little walk. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte. That's beautiful. I love that image. Jessica, did you have your hand raised?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Hi, my name is Jessica, and this is my first time here.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you. And yeah, it's been a joy. I really enjoyed listening to Judith and Sue's share your stories and your wisdom. And what came up for me, while I don't know the teachings that you're referring to, I'm actually not aware of them. I have a practice of meditation, but not the teaching. So there's a lot for me to learn. And what came up for me when you were talking was acceptance and making space for dukkha, as you call it, and the teaching of, and this too, like that helps me when I'm dealing with a lot of chronic injuries and grief of different relationships. And so for me, the thing that's been most helpful is, and this too, just allowing it. I have space for all of it to be here and I can grow and learn through it. And so I just appreciate the stories you told. One about the path, and then also relating to dukkha and not going straight into metta, which I still don't know so much about. So that practice is really helpful for me. And the other thing is, I was really curious about the comment. I think Judith, you said, or maybe it was Candace, I don't know, something about I discovered the path. The Buddha said, I discovered the path, but I didn't make it or create it. That is actually confusing to me. So I'm sitting with that. It's not clear yet. So that was interesting. And I'm going to sit with that.
Yeah. I'll speak to that because I was the one who quoted it. And I think what he was talking about is that these realities, the truth of these realities that he discovered were always there. You know, human nature was always what it was. And the causes of suffering were always what they were. And the way to end suffering were always what they were. But he discovered it. And then he began to practice it. And then he began to teach it. So that I'm putting words into his mouth. But that's the way I interpret it.
And so the teaching it and walking it is what then keeps it open.
And teaching it and walking it keeps it open. Exactly. Because then other people begin to learn. Hmm. They begin to walk it as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. And welcome.
Thank you.
Hope we see you again. Anyone else? So much to talk about. Sherry. Morning, Sherry.
Hi. I wanted to share something that's been emerging for me in my meditation practice that I feel like is also overlapping with right view, right concentration and right view. I'm just sorting through, like thinking about these eight, right concentration and also right view. I've had a pattern of, while I'm meditating, when I find myself kind of wandering off into something like planning or rehearsing or having, you know, that conversation that I'm worried about or whatever, you know, using labeling to bring myself back into the present, thinking or worrying or, but it doesn't usually end there. And I've noticed that there's a kind of, like a physical reaction that I go through, or maybe a whole self reaction. It's not just mental or physical, where I kind of, you know, I push that thing away, whatever that was. And it kind of leaves me with this sort of like, this sort of, I don't know, like a reaction or rebound that doesn't feel so productive. And it's been years and years and years that I've been, that I've noticed this and haven't really, or I think I've been experiencing this without really noticing it. And I just spontaneously one day said to myself, actually, I said it to the people in my planning, welcome to my sit. We're sitting right now. Welcome, you people that I'm worried about. We're sitting right now. I mean, I don't think I think all those words, but the word welcome does come to mind. And so I have this sense of being kind of like peopled in my meditation, that there's lots of folks around just kind of keeping me company. And then things settle quite quickly. It's not so much of a sense of ugh. And I think that has been reflecting itself a little bit in my way of relating to people outside of meditation as well. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share that.
That's so beautiful, Sherry, and that's so important that when we allow ourselves and everything about us to be fine just as it is and even welcome, that we can be that way with others. That's so, you know, we don't think about that, but it's profound to first accept ourselves and then we can accept others. And it's just, it's wonderful that you discovered that. Really, I'm so happy for you. I remember hearing a guided meditation a couple of months ago. I shared this somewhere where he suggested, saying, welcome to the party, to all of these, everything that's coming up. Welcome to the party. We're all in here. And that just settles it. But what you said is even more, it's a calmer way to just say, we're meditating right now. Welcome in. Welcome here.
If I can add that, the earlier reaction felt divisive.
Mm-hmm.
And this other way of relating feels much more congruent and making whole as opposed to dividing.
Yes. Beautiful. Really beautiful. You've been a big teacher this morning, Sherry. Thank you. Who else? This is a wonderful discussion. Wide ranging. Lauren. Morning, Lauren.
Good morning. Well, this was fortuitous for me because I was going to talk about the thing that kind of caught my attention and held my attention while you were giving us prompts was Sue's talk about the renunciation and her old storyline, old issue coming up. And I thought, Yeah, I have this old stove, those old storylines that I keep thinking I figured it out, but there it is again. And I thought, yeah, I need to give up that old storyline. And I was just working with it this morning before Susie even started talking. How do I give it up? Because it just keeps coming back. And then when Sherry, yeah, when she shared and she was sharing about what she did first, which was to note it and kind of want to get rid of it. And I was thinking, well, that's not going to work. Of course, that's what I do. And then she said she welcomed it. I thought that's exactly it. I'm sitting here this morning in my meditation before anybody shared with this old storyline. And I'm going, how can I get rid of this thing? I've heard it over and over again. It's just like, and then I realized it has to be welcome. I'm meditating right now. I don't even need that storyline to leave my meditation. I need, it's the attitude. I really need to be welcoming it. So thank you so much. And as you said this morning, Candace, we learned so much from each other. We just really do. Bless the Sangha. Thank you.
Bless the Sangha. Thank you, Lauren. Yes, we do. That's why it's so important to hear everyone's voices. We learned so much. Suze.
Just wanted to add a thing that, so from retreat, I talked with the Aya Ananda Bodhi about this old issue, and she gave a good suggestion that I'll share. Because my storyline comes from some hurtful stuff that happened in childhood, she suggested that the grown-up Suze reach out to the little kid. Back then she was Susie, and do some healing from the grown-up Suze to the little kid Susie. And I haven't totally figured out how to do that, but I have a couple ideas, and I'm going to try it, because I think that there is some healing piece. It's not just a welcoming, but there's also a healing piece that that was another idea. One part of that renunciation might be to work on the healing of the pain, that if it's really old.
Thank you, Suze. That's really helpful. It's got me thinking. Julie, welcome. Good morning.
Hello, and thanks for your talk, Candace and Suze and Judith. Suze, I just wanted to tag on to what you said, because that suggestion reminds me a lot of something that Arv suggested to me, almost a year ago when I was talking about some stuff, which is the whole IFS framework of internal family systems. And I just found that whole process to be extremely helpful in terms of, and what I discovered in that, for anyone who's not familiar with IFS, the idea is that we all carry multiple parts within ourselves, which you can think of as different personalities that formed at different parts in our lives. And as we get older, we realize that some of them aren't helpful at all. They're causing a lot of pain. And what I noticed in my own personal practice is that working this way allowed me to actually discover and develop new parts, new, more mature parts that serve that role of self-compassion and comfort and a sort of a tender understanding that these things developed as they did because of the circumstances of our own lives. So I don't know if that's helpful, but just thought wanted to share that.
Thank you, Julie. You know, all of this talk has kind of focused me back on my visit with family and how all of that stuff that seemed so important, all of the baggage, isn't. And I really learned it on that visit, that just being with everyone I love and just wanting to be with them and erasing everything about the past that might be uncomfortable was doable. It didn't matter. None of that stuff is necessary. And it's really changed a lot of old habits for me that I can feel myself going into it. And then I go, you just proved to yourself that wasn't important. It's quite a remarkable thing. Julie, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just on retreat up in Samish Bay, and I found myself almost naively wanting to leave some pain there. You know, I thought this is such a beautiful place. And a year ago I was there and going through some really difficult times. And I thought, okay, it's like the 1 year anniversary of this. I'm going to leave this pain here, set it down, walk away, and it will be gone. What I found is that I couldn't shake it. And, you know, through that, through the retreat and even now through this, discussions with everyone, I realize, you know, the idea was not to leave the pain there, but just be okay with it. Just sit with the discomfort of it. And now today I'm realizing that I might want to, you know, maybe not welcome it, but, you know, just say hello, be less rigid with it. Just more, you know, it's maybe welcoming, or at least not fighting it.
That's really beautiful, Julie. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Jason, good morning.
Good morning. This is only my second time attending one of these, and I'm still very new. I've been meditating for a while now, and you know, I'm still just learning more about the teachings, if you will. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but thinking about the Eightfold Path, rather than thinking about a path, my brain is thinking about more guardrails to kind of guide you in your path, if you will, like the certain, you know, provide you a certain framework that kind of makes sure that you don't fall off the path. I think of that specifically in context with, I've got a difficult family situation, which I have a family member that I love deeply that is just lashing out, that is just really is uncomfortable with my presence. Let me just put it that way. For whatever reason, there's been some stories or I don't know, whatever. So in all the responses though, I'm just feeding her love is what I'm trying to do. And just trying to, you know, say this is, I love you. That's all I care about. That's where I'm at. And try to do that. I don't know if that's right application of that, but just where my brain is thinking right now. So I don't know. I'm curious to see that seems resonates correctly or not, as I'm just trying to learn this whole Eightfold Path thing.
That's really beautiful, Jason. I'm sorry you're going through that. It's a really hard time when you're going through that. And just being love and letting people know you love them. I mean, what better way could you respond? Because you're not adding anything to the suffering.
Yeah.
Now, there's suffering, there's something coming up with them. But you're not adding to that. And I think that's such a gift to them. Someday they may feel that. And you feel that. I mean, I'm sensing that feels right to you.
Yes.
Feels like the right thing to do.
That's indeed. Just
beautiful. Really beautiful. That's a great guardrail. Yeah. I think of it, you know, I think of it as my emergency lights. So it's kind of like a guardrail. It's just a different, different technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason, and welcome. It's really great that you've come before, you've come again, and you're speaking up. You know, you're part of us.
Thanks.
Come back and come back.
Candace, if I might add one little piece.
Oh, do.
I love your story so much, and it feels like a high bar sometimes to let go of the family dynamic or some of the hurt or whatever. And recently I listened, I can't even remember which teacher said this, but I think probably every teacher says it. We do what we're best able to do in the moment. And sometimes we can't be love. Sometimes I can't be. I'll just make it me. And there are moments when we can, but there's this navigating between boundaries and protection and staying safe. And I love how Philip Moffitt uses the phrase, as best you are able in the moment. And then not to judge ourselves if we aren't able to manifest our aspiration. I just wanted to kind of add that to what was a beautiful exchange so that we also know there are times when the pain is bigger than that or the fear or whatever is up. So just really honoring where we're at and honestly responding from there. Thanks for letting me say.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Thanks, Suze. I think it's important to say that. Vanessa, can we see you? Good morning. Oh, you need to unmute.
I said, yes, you can see me now. I'll let you see. I'm really glad I came today and finding value in what everybody's sharing. So thank you. I'd like to be more consistent in being here. The relational conflicts and old pain, it's a big theme right now that I'm working with. And I just wanted to touch on what's interesting. It sounds wonderful, and obviously, and depending on the situation, just coming back to love is very, very real and can wash the other things away. I've had some estrangement with family, and then there have been crises that have brought us back together. But currently I'm in a situation with someone where I just keep, I'm really needing to work on this thing with this person. And sometimes, you know, obviously the other person needs to be available, but repair and just at least trying to find that can be really valuable, but it's not easy. And I'm learning right now for myself that I've got anger, so I really need to step back and let that digest through me before I'm able to connect with the person. So I'm having some wisdom instead of just being this kind of frustrated, broken record. But the other thing I wanted to say is it can be triggering for me when I feel hurt by someone or I see a toxic behavior and they keep saying, I love you, I love you. And I'm like, okay, but you're not changing your behavior. So that doesn't feel like love. And I just think, yeah, it gets very complicated wanting to work. Both people have to be willing and able in some way to like work through and actually hear each other and care about where they're coming from. So it's hard stuff, but just wanted to touch on that. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Vanessa. I mean, I think it's really important. And that was one of the reasons I didn't know if I could hold that love, you know, if that intention was going to be doable. Just how everybody else acted, and somehow it all came together, which was such a gift. And it, that isn't always going to happen. But
sorry, I just
aspirations.
I didn't mean to step on your story and
not judging, and
definitely there are different extenuating situations too. So I just wanted to.
I didn't feel that way at all.
Good.
Thank you. Yes, no. I think it's important to really be honest with our feelings, and as Suze was saying, not to skip over the dukkha and go right to metta, but to understand what's going on within and honor it. And with that, I think we're at the end of our group discussion this morning. It's been wonderful. I'm so glad I kept it open, because I think it was really helpful to all of us. Thank you, everyone who spoke up and shared. Thank you so much.